And nerds, girls and boys, to a brand new episode of Geek to Me Radio. Tonight, we have writer David Pepos back on the show. He's going to talk a little bit about Punisher. We're going to get into the new Space Ghost comic from Dynamite Comics. Later on, we've got my interview with director Emma Westenberg talking about her brand new film with Ewan McGregor, Bleeding Love. All that and more, stand by.
We're talking TV, comics and movies, and video games. Star Trek from Star Wars, we'll try to explain. There are 12 doctors, 4 Hogwarts houses, 1 ring rules them all. To be the greatest Pokemon master, you must catch them all. You must catch them all. Try to catch them all. Gotta catch.
Driving around the greater St. Louis area tonight, listening to us on the Big 550 KTRS. Hello to all of you out there in the St. Louis listening area. We appreciate you tuning in. If you're streaming us on the KTRS app or on the website, hello to all of you digitally fine folks. Thank you for finding us there. And of course, if you're watching us on YouTube and Facebook, hello to all of you. We appreciate you checking us out there. And as always, if you're hearing us after the fact in the podcast form on whatever platform you get your podcast from, we sincerely appreciate you finding us there, listening. Hopefully you've left us a nice 5-star review at this point. That always makes us very happy to see those. I always say, if you like us, tell your friends. If you don't, tell your enemies. We'll take it any way we can get it. Tonight, it's a full show. We've got him back on. I think this might be his 4th time on the show. We're going to have, pretty soon, we're going to get one of those little gold jackets like on Saturday Night Live. Back on the show, David Pepos. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, 4th time's the charm.
Yeah.
I can't wait to catch up with you on all things Punisher in my new series of Dynamite Comics, Space Ghost, hitting stores May 1st.
It seems like every time we have you on, it's been so impressive to watch your career, especially in the past, 3 or 4 years, just shoot up. I mean, I love the Kickstarter stuff you did with the Oz, but now we had you last time for Savage Avengers, and now you're writing Punisher, and of course the new Space Ghost. I remember Space Ghost as a little kid. They used to have it on Saturday mornings, and it was one of those cool cartoons. I mean, he's got all the cool powers, and then Space Ghost Coast to Coast. I'm assuming the new comic is more like the cartoon adventures, less Coast to Coast. Would I be correct in that assumption?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat the question? You cut out there 1 second.
Oh, sorry. No, I was just saying I remember growing up with Space Ghost, and I remember, obviously, the cartoon version, and then we got Space Ghost Coast to Coast. I'm assuming the new comic is more cartoon version, less Coast to Coast.
Yes. This is very much a reclaiming of superhero Space Ghost back to his superheroic routes. So I watched every episode from the original 1966 run, as well as the 1981 revival and Space Stars. And we're sort of taking all those ingredients that Alex Toth left on the character, and we're sort of bringing them back for the year 2024 using sort of modern storytelling techniques and sort of the tone of today. I'm very excited. There's a lot of people out there who only know Space Ghost as a talk show host, and I'm very excited to prove them why he's the greatest superhero in the galaxy.
It's kind of cool how it's been that secular, I should say, from the 1966, the revival in the 80s. And then, we got him in the late 90s on the Coast to Coast talk show. But it seems like it's almost like Pennywise from It. Every 30 years, he gets a little bit more of a revival of some sort, or he's kind of brought back into the zeitgeist. What do you think people are going to be most surprised about with the new series from Dynamite?
Yeah. Most people, they don't know that Space Ghost is really like if Batman fought crime in the Star Wars universe. But I think the other thing that people don't know is they sort of see him. They only see that amazing Alex Toth design, which is iconic and has endured for the better part of 60 years. But for me, the thing that I think really stands out is not just his deep, iconic bench of villains, which is just as stacked as anything that Batman or Spider-Man or The Flash would fight. Mm-hmm. But I think it's the human heart that's really beating behind this series, and that our book is about Space Ghost kind of going through a gauntlet of all these iconic villains, but it's also about how does he encounter his sidekicks, Jan, Jace, and Blip for the first time, and why does he take them in, and how do they go from being these orphaned rescues to becoming his sidekicks, to becoming these trusted partners, and then eventually this sort of surrogate found family in their own right. I'd say that our book is kind of like Batman the Long Halloween meets J.J. Abrams' Star Trek. Ooh. But there's also kind of, I think, that emotional through line from Jurassic Park in our book about how Dr. Grant sort of warms up to Lex and Tim. I think a core dynamic to our book is showing that Space Ghost doesn't just have these superpowers, but that he's a noble but ultimately complex and conflicted person, and how he's a great space vigilante, but now he's going to have his hardest challenge yet, which is being the ultimate single dad, and he's in a little over his head, and how does he rise to the challenge? And I think that's going to be the thing that people are going to be most surprised about, is just what a relatable but ultimately flawed but ultimately good hero, good person that Space Ghost is.
That's setting an awful high bar already. Jurassic Park, J.J. Abrams, Star Trek, Batman. You're throwing all those key phrases out. Man, that's going to be I'm more stoked for it now than I was when it was originally announced. And we saw some of the covers that they're getting ready to release. There's several variant covers, which I'm a sucker for variant covers, so I'm going to end up buying all of them, David. I'm not going to lie. But it's really fascinating that, there's all this deep history behind it. And you mentioned that with, all the going back to the well for all this stuff. Is it going to be, is this, I don't know if they've told you or if you can say, is this going to be an ongoing series or is it a limited series?
Yeah, it's about as ongoing as one gets in given the volatility of the marketplace right now.
Yeah.
When Dynamite first approached me for this series, they said, do you have any ideas for a year to start? And so I put together a pitch, ultimately 12 issues in an annual. I want to make sure that when we do end our series, that it does have a distinct beginning, middle, and end. And so the way that I've kind of planned out the series, it's across a lot of done-in-one storytelling. Books like Ryan North's Fantastic Four and Steve Orlando and Scarlet Witch were really influential on me in that I wanted to make sure that every month readers got like a satisfying chunk, a self-contained story. And so that way, the rare times that we do a two-parter, it kind of gives our cliffhangers the maximum amount of punch. By having this kind of game plan in mind, we're able to sort of build out a really compelling emotional arc through the whole series that has a distinct beginning, middle, and end. I think that's the coolest part about Space Ghost to me, is that he's not a character like Batman that by design needs to run for 60 years unbroken. This is a character who, in terms of his comics appearances, hasn't even really had that many appearances in comics, and his original episodes were only 5 minutes a pop, so there's no backstory or continuity. For me, I see the mission statement as we're going to explore these characters. We're going to explore this universe a little bit. We have more runway to tell a Space Ghost story than really anybody else has before.
Wow.
And so, I think by virtue of that, we're able to kind of have an emotional arc that allows these characters to grow and develop and to change in a way that you can't necessarily do with a Batman. That even, if Dick Grayson graduates to becoming Nightwing, there's always like a generational aspect. There's a new Robin or a new Batgirl waiting in the wings. And for me, there's no new Jan or Jace. There's no replacing any of those sidekicks. They're every bit as integral to a Space Ghost story as Space Ghost himself. And so this is very much, I think, an ensemble book that is about this superhero and his three sidekicks, and getting to watch them kind of grow and evolve on an issue-to-issue basis. I think it makes them a lot more compelling and a lot more interesting to follow. And my goal is for you to fall in love with these characters in the same way that I have. And I think the way to do that is sometimes you let them rise to the occasion, and sometimes you let them take their lumps. And we're going to have that for all these characters throughout our run.
And I always do a poor job of getting to the chats. My apologies to all of you. We've got My Flock says, hi, everyone. BK on the Air says hello to David and James. We've got Chance Bartel from the Nostalgic Podblast says hello. I'm going through here. Kilo, I'm sure I'm going to butcher this last name. I'm sorry, Kilo. Kilo Melensimus says Space Ghost. So obviously Kilo's excited. And let's see. I'm just going through to make sure I'm not missing anybody. Larry Quiggin says all the covers on my pull list. So Larry's my comic book dealer. So he's yeah, Larry, we may have to do all the covers. I think so. Larry's listening. He's our official comic book sponsor, Bugs Comics and Games. I was curious then, because you, one of my questions, and you kind of answered it, you said they came to you and said, do you have any ideas? That was going to be one of my questions. Did you go to Dynamite and say, hey, I've got a great idea for a Space Ghost, or did they, based on the work that you've been doing, say, hey, what would you give us for a Space Ghost comic?
Yeah, they came to me. I've been on Dynamite's radar for a while. Ever since my very first book, Spencer and Locke, I've made it a point to email Nick Barucci at Dynamite every time that I've got a new series coming out, him and editor Nate Cosby. And it was working on Moon Knight, City of the Dead, and Punisher back-to-back that Nate said, you know what, like, I think David might be a really good fit on Space Ghost. And so he passed my work on to my editor, Joe Rybant, who agreed. And so they approached me at New York Comic Con last year. Dynamite had just announced that they were doing a licensing deal with Warner Brothers Discovery to do a whole series of Warner Brothers comics, including Thundercats with Declan Shalvey and Drew Moss, and Johnny Quest with Joe Casey and Sebastian Perez. And so, Joe approached me and said, you know, you would be the top of our list to write Space Ghost. Would you have any interest? And the thing that was so exciting to me is that a book like Space Ghost, it already feels like unexplored territory. And that's something that I'm really trying to lean into, is that you don't have to have watched any cartoons to appreciate our book. You don't have to have read any comics. This is brand new, jumping on point. We will give you all the continuity that you need. You don't have to do homework. I did it all for you. But also on top of that, that we're able to kind of lean into all the coolest parts of the superhero genre without any of some of the structural hurdles. You know, I love working at Marvel, but when you're working in a shared universe like that, you have to share the toys. And that's often what your editors will help you out with, is kind of figuring out, seems I got lost there. Okay, am I back?
Yeah, the audio was fine. You just froze briefly on picture, but the audio was great.
Oh, sorry about that. Okay.
That's all right.
all right. I think I'm back now.
Yeah. Hopefully. Can you hear us?
Yeah. I was just going to say that, you know, working at a place like Marvel, you know, you have to share the toys. And so your editors will kind of tell you which characters are available and which ones aren't. And so working on something like Space Ghost, I don't have to share the toys. I could just say, you know, I'd like to work with Zorak this month. I'd like to write a story with Brack or Metallus or the Council of Doom. And as long as sort of our take is within what Warner Brothers is comfortable with, and they've been so they've given us so much latitude to really kind of take these characters and run with them, that it's been really exciting. I haven't really been able to tell a superhero story like this before. And it really is sort of, maybe not since Savage Avengers, where I'm really able to kind of put the pedal to the metal and really kind of push this thing as hard as I think it can go. And I think it's made it such an enjoyable experience. This really does feel like me and artist Jonathan Lau's vision from beginning to end. And it really is work that I couldn't be prouder of.
And if you're just now tuning in, we are talking with David Pepos, who is writing Space Ghost for Dynamite Comics. I just, what you said earlier about how, you know, it was such a brief, you know, the 5-minute shots of this we'd get in the cartoon form. He had his 1981 revival. It's almost, when you think about Space Ghost compared to Batman, you don't have all that history. You don't have all the baggage. You can really do some fresh things without people coming in like, hey, well, you can't do that because in episode 3, you know, in the second series. So I would assume that's very freeing. And I'm just curious, because everyone likes to do, you know, this is for a modern audience. I feel like Space Ghost kind of exists outside of time and space in his own world. So were there any challenges specifically when you took on this book that you found it was something that was an impediment, or was it just been a free flow?
It's been very freeing. I mean, you know, the thing that for me that always kind of stood out about Space Ghost is that Space Ghost has always been a product of its time. The very first show came out in 1966. It was right on the heels of Adam West's Batman, when everyone was trying to capitalize on sort of that Silver Age energy. And so you can see a lot of the shared DNA between those shows. And then, you know, during the Space Stars revival in 1981, you sort of, your contemporaries with Super Friends and Spider-Man and his Amazing Friends. And so you kind of see that that's sort of part of the zeitgeist there. And then you even see Space Ghost Coast to Coast, which is a lot of people's introduction to the character, mine included, which I think was very emblematic of the irony of the MTV generation. And then you see books like Joe Kelly and Ariel Olivetti, who in 2005 did a Space Ghost miniseries that was sort of almost like a Batman Begins retelling of the origin. And so that's sort of similar in the zeitgeist coming out right before Batman Begins. And so that was, I think, the mission statement for me, is that Alex Toth gave us all the ingredients of an A-lister with Space Ghost. But nobody's really been able to make a meal out of it. And so for me, it's so freeing. I don't necessarily feel nervous. I, of course, want to tell the best Space Ghost story I can, but I also feel so confident in the ingredients that I've been handed that I don't think there's a way to tell a bad version of this. I think if you sort of stay true to the characters and you sort of are paying attention to the qualities that stand out to you as a creator and figure out how do we elevate that? How do we, you know, find ways to enhance those qualities, those flavors for each of these characters, you can't go wrong with it. And so I think that's been the most freeing part to me, is I see all the archetypes of these characters, you know, of Space Ghost and Jan and Jace and Zorak and Brack and Metallus and the rest of the Council of Doom and some of the other villains. And so for me, it's just, what are the wrinkles that we can kind of add that just enhance those flavors? Yeah. And so it's been a really fun process for sure.
And obviously, you know, with the first issue coming out, I think later this month, if I'm not mistaken, should be out.
April 1st, yeah.
We've got, I'm curious, what issue, and I'm not asking for spoilers or anything, I'm just curious, what issue you're currently working on? Are you in like 3, 4, 5? Where are you at in the writing process? Five?
Yeah, I'm writing issue 5 right now. Jonathan is doing art on issue 4 right now. Andrew Dollhouse, our colorist, is coloring issue 3, and I believe Taylor Esposito is lettering issue 3. We're pretty far ahead. You know, Jonathan moves like a machine. I feel like working with him, it's like working with a Terminator, who's just like chasing after you, that you need more pages. And so, he's such a spectacular artist. I can't say enough good things about working with him. But I think it's been so great to have this much done before the first issue comes out. By the time that people are reading issue 1, chances are what I would consider to be our first arc will be done, or at least fully written. That's like really exciting to me. I've never been that far ahead on a series.
Oh, really?
Before the first issue comes out. Just in terms of like the production process of everything, working with somebody like Jonathan, it's, he's very talented, but he's inhumanly fast. he really is the full package. And the best part is that every issue looks better than the issue before it. I feel like Jonathan and Andrew have really like found the character. So issue 1 looks great, but you see, even by issue 2, you're like, oh, something just clicked into a much higher gear. And same thing with issue 3. It's pretty impressive to watch. And I feel so lucky to be in such talented hands.
And so you said they asked originally for a pitch for about a year's worth of story. So we'll get at least 12 issues, if not more.
Yeah. I pitched it as 12 issues in an annual. So okay. I guess 13 chapters in total. And yeah, there's room for more to slot it in. There were some cool Space Ghost villains that didn't quite make the cut as far as like full issue villains, because I wanted to stagger out the best of the best,
right,
and a couple deep cuts that you might not expect. And then there's a few other villains that are really iconic that sort of show up in you know, sense. But there were a handful of deeper cuts that I was like, ugh, I would love to do something with the Antin and more of a cameo, that Matter Man or Eclipse Woman, for example, that don't quite fit, in this game plan. But if the demand is there and people want more that they don't quite, I would be happy to, I know exactly where I would slot in. So, yeah, your congressman, Tom, you want some Antimatter Man or Eclipse Woman? I will do my best to make that happen.
Yeah, hopefully, I'm assuming that we'll see the sales on the initial run of the books, and that'll be able to then, if people are buying it, obviously there's the demand, so people are gonna vote with their dollars. We'll get more. We'll get more Space Ghost out of it. The more you, the person who's listening or watching to this, ends up buying of it. We're gonna take a very quick break. We're gonna come back in just a moment. To ask him, you can text us on the KTRS text lines at 84126. Just include your name and your question so we can read that out on the air. And keep an eye on the chats. You can also ask us a question there in the chats. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio on the Big 550 KTRS. Please stand by.
Hi, guys. It's Emily Swallow. I have two things to tell you, one of which is this is the way. And you are listening to Geek to Me Radio.
Emily Swallow, the armor from The Mandalorian. Amara from Supernatural. Got to meet her and hang out with a bunch of you fine folks in Hannibal, Missouri at Big River Comic Con this past weekend. A great amount of fun was had Friday and Saturday in Hannibal, Missouri. My thanks again to Deb Hayes, if you're listening, for inviting me to your con and allowing me to host Emily's panel. She was great. She was very enamored with my dog, Grimlock. She almost tried to take him home, but I stood firm. Grimlock's still home with us, and Emily's gone off to her dogs, who I just found out are Norma Jean and Arthur Miller. Very, very cute dogs. Emily, if you're listening, you've got adorable dogs as well. If you are looking for comic books, if you're listening to David and I talk right now, and you're thinking to yourself, man, that Space Ghost comic sounds really good. How do I get that? If you're in the greater St. Louis, St. Charles area, head out to Bugs Comics and Games. Just go see Larry, say, hey, I heard about the Space Ghost comic. I want to put that on my pull list, and Larry will make sure you get a copy. That way you're not missing anything. A pull list is a great way to make sure if you can't get to the comic book store on New Comic Wednesdays, you'll still have your comic books even if you can't make it till Thursday or Friday. You start a pull list, and if you're in the store, join the Avengers Club. That way you start saving money on your comics. You start saving money on back issues, new issues, toys, games, bags, boards, Pokemon cards, whatever it is you're buying, you'll start saving money. So you got a pull list, you join the Avengers Club, you're set. You're never going to miss an issue of Space Ghost or Punisher or Moon Knight or whatever else David's writing at the time, or any other comic that maybe David's not writing you want to check out. Larry has been running a comic book store since I was unable to drive a car. I used to have to ride my bike uphill both ways to get to his comic book store in Florissant. He's now out in O'Fallon off of Bryan Road. You can easily get to him from either Highway 70 or from the Page Extension 364. Check him out. If you want back issues, he's got a ton of back issues. He's always buying, too. That's why he always has new back issues when I go there. So if you're looking to divest yourself of your collection, give Larry a call at Bugs Comics and Games. Let him know, and he'll give you a very fair price for your collection. If you're wanting to get back into it, maybe you haven't been buying lately, Space Ghost is probably a great jumping on point for a new comic book reader. He's got Dynamite Comics, Image Comics, DC, Marvel, whatever it might be. Larry's got it, and if he doesn't have it, he's kind enough to make sure he orders it just for you. He's like your own personal comic concierge. So check out Bugs Comics and Games on Instagram. Like their page there. That way, if you're not in the greater St. Louis, St. Charles area, you just say, hey, I want to that comic you had pictured, I want that one. He'll ship it right to you securely, send you a PayPal invoice, you pay for it. Off to your door it goes. Bugs Comics and Games on Facebook as well. Please like their page there. Very proud to have them as the official comic book sponsor here on Geek to Me Radio as we chat comic books with David Pepos. Very prolific. We mentioned Moon Knight. We were talking Space Ghost earlier. And I want to say I'm very impressed with the new Punisher series. If you haven't picked this one up yet, I think issue 5 is due out pretty soon. But it's not Frank Castle. This is a former S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. And I'm one of those people who I've got a short box full of new comics that I still haven't read. So I'm only 2 issues into the new series, but it's been such a fun read and it's taken such a cool direction. Sometimes you need to change it up. And I think this new Punisher is just what the doctor ordered. Talk a little bit about working on the new series, if you don't mind, David.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for the kind words. And yeah, we actually just wrapped up our origin miniseries for our new Punisher, Joe Garrison, just wrapped up last month, I believe. So with our 4-issue mini, what we've done for Punisher is my editor, Tom Brevoort, he approached me and said, hey, at the end of Jason Aaron's run on the character, Frank Castle is going to be in parts unknown. And so we're going to want to introduce a brand new character. And I had written Punisher 2099 in the pages of Savage Avengers, and they really liked what I did with the character. So they said, hey, let's kind of put together a new character. And the thing about Punisher is it's a controversial character, to say least. No matter where you are on the political spectrum, everybody has an opinion on sort of what a Punisher story should or shouldn't be, where what kind of direction should be taken with that character. And often a lot of those opinions are like diametrically opposed to each other. So for me, the question was, you know, how do we thread the needle? Like, how do we tell a Punisher story that still feels like a Punisher story, but also carves out its own unique niche, and at the same time can maybe sidestep some of the political landmines, you know, with this sort of clean slate, and be able to kind of tell this character on his own terms? And so the way that we kind of put it together was, I pitched Joe Garrison as sort of the John Wick of S.H.I.E.L.D., sort of this high elite Wetworks agent who had retired years ago to pursue the call of family. And unfortunately for Joe, somebody just blew up his house with his family still inside, and the police have named him the prime suspect. And so Joe goes underground, basically in a quest for revenge to figure out who set him up and why. And the twist for our story is that, you know, calling yourself the Punisher, whether it's the real world or in the comic sphere, is a choice, even in the Marvel universe. And so for us, the twist that I'm most proud of is that Joe, his whole arc is about how does he embrace this role of becoming the Punisher. And so when he starts out, it just so happens that his shield ballistic vest and his weapons belt, they happen to look a little skull-like. And so, you know, when he takes out a gang of Mr. Negative's inner demons, a bystander tells the media, "I think that guy has a skull on his chest." And so suddenly the media runs with it. And everyone's saying, "Is there a new Punisher? Is there a new Punisher?" And that's my favorite part of Joe's origin story, is that throughout the whole series, he's not calling himself the Punisher. He's saying, you know, whatever people call me, it's just misdirection, I don't care. But then as he gets deeper into it, and as this goes from being just a personal mission of revenge to sort of a self-sustaining crusade, he starts thinking to himself, everybody's been calling me the Punisher, and I'm starting to think they're right. And I think that's such an interesting through line and an interesting character arc for somebody like that. But also, you know, I wanted to sort of set Joe apart. I wanted to put him on a higher shelf. I see the Punisher as the ultimate "don't try this at home" kind of character. You know, I think he's up there with sort of like Rorschach, you know, as like he's a character that a lot of people like, but sometimes they might like him in a more antisocial way. And so for me, it's like, okay, like how do we put Joe, you know, he doesn't stem from a real life military branch. You know, he's part of S.H.I.E.L.D. And so that way, you know, you're not having anyone sort of comparing one branch versus the other.
Right.
You also have him giving his own unique arsenal of weapons with the S.H.I.E.L.D. tech. And that way we're sort of able to elevate the character's choreography in a way that Rick Remender did something similar in his Punisher run, where he had Frank Castle get like a whole cachet of supervillain weapons. And that was a cool idea. But having the S.H.I.E.L.D. weaponry means it's something that's like specific to Joe. It's, you know, it gives him like a little bit of a tech edge. And then I think the gun-fu choreography, I think, is the thing that really set it apart. And our artist, Dave Wachter, did such a sensational job on it. His new book, Uncanny Valley, just dropped at Boom Studios and sold out. Oh, wow. So you should definitely pick up the second printing. But being able to sort of have Joe, you know, the weaponry is certainly important, but he doesn't necessarily need it. It can, you know, he can just use whatever's around him in his environment to kind of do his enemies in. And I thought that was kind of the way that I pitched Joe, was you can drop him anywhere. You can drop him in a nightclub. You can drop him in a zoo. You can drop him in an office building. And half the fun is seeing how is he going to fight his way out of this.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the way that I've sort of left Joe Garrison to position him was really kind of the central question of the Punisher, which is I wanted to make him a Punisher for the people. Because I think no matter where you are on the political spectrum, I think a question that a lot of people are in agreement on is, don't you feel like the system is hopelessly rigged against the little guy?
Yeah.
That, you know, people are just falling through the cracks and the people in power can't or won't help them. And that was sort of the through line that I pitched to Marvel, was if the law can't or won't help you, Joe Garrison is the guy that you call to help you settle the score. He's a Punisher for the people. And so that was sort of the way that I felt like we could kind of thread the needle of still kind of telling the vigilante justice stories of the Punisher in a way that like still feels a little more palatable, that still sort of has that a core of that anti-heroic heroism, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so I was so thrilled by the response to that book. It's the best reviewed thing I've done at Marvel. and I know there were a lot of people that when we announced that miniseries, they had a lot of trepidation, and I completely understand why. But you know, for me, I think the iconography of the Punisher is really cool and interesting, and on top of that, I think it is a character that has had a legacy, even kind of like, you know, going back to Punisher 2099. And so, yeah, I think, Rachel Cole Alves was another character who I had pitched to write on Savage Avengers, and we couldn't fit her in. So it was really nice to be able to kind of add my brick to the house of ideas, to add this character, and to see, they just announced this week, Erica Schultz, writing, Daredevil, The Woman Without Fear,
yeah,
starring Elektra Nachos. And, they mentioned in the solicit copy, that she's going to be going head to head with our new Punisher, Joe Garrison. And I've been keeping that under wraps for a couple of months, ever since Punisher editor Devin Lewis told me that was going to happen. And I'm so thrilled, because that's ultimately how a legacy character survives.
Right.
Is that, it passes hands. I could write Joe Garrison for 100 issues, but if it was just me, the moment I leave, it's just Pepos's thing.
Yeah.
But the fact that Erica kind of took that baton and is now running with it, I'm very excited, because the more characters that play around with Joe, the more he'll get traction in the Marvel universe for hopefully years to come.
Yeah, we just had Erica Schultz on our Justice League Revisited podcast covering Night of Shadows with Susan Eisenberg, when she was talking about all the stuff she's doing with Hawkeye and Black Widow and now Daredevil. So, we always like seeing people like you and like Erica come up with these great projects. We've just got a couple minutes left before I have to let you go. As you were talking, I'm sitting there thinking, Punisher, Frank Castle, you know, you kind of think of him as a bit of a blunt instrument. There's a drug ring or something, or there's child pornographers or sex traffickers. Punisher's going to go and do his business. As I'm reading your series, I feel like Joe's a little bit more of a scalpel. He's very precise, especially like his battle with Bushwhacker, where he has those charges set around the piano, blows him up, he has no justice where to position him. It's a little more finesse than I think we've seen Frank use, which I think is a nice thing that sets him apart.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly the way that I tried to frame the two of them, is that, I see Frank as a wrecking ball, and Joe is kind of like a surgeon, with the gun foo, working his way through a crowd, or figuring out where do I plant these bombs? So how can I position this guy so I can drop a piano on his head? just a lot of fun stuff. And I think he's a character that's got a ton of potential to him. There's so many cool things, and I'm very excited to see where Marvel takes the character next.
And obviously, there's probably no time for sleep because you're writing Space Ghost, you're writing Punisher. Like I said, I love the Moon Knight series you just did. What else, if people want to keep up with you more, or is there anything else they can look for on their comic book stands or just websites and social media handles so people can keep up with you?
Yeah, well, the final issue of my horror series at Mad Cave Studios, The Devil That Wears My Face, comes out May 8th. That book is Face Off Meets The Exorcist. It's about a Vatican priest who's called upon to perform an exorcism on the son of a Spanish nobleman, and unfortunately for him, the ritual backfires. So our priest finds himself trapped in a stranger's body, while his body has been hijacked by the demon known as Legion, who hightails it back to the Vatican to wreak havoc. And I've been working with artist Alex Cormick on the book. He's sensational. Issue 6 comes out May 8th, the week after Space Ghost number 1. And I can't wait for people to read it. We're building up to a really fun twist that I've set up a couple of breadcrumbs through the series. Nobody's caught it yet, but I think it'll turn the whole series on its ear a bit. You can pre-order the trade paperback for Punisher, The Bullet That Follows. That's Joe Garrison's origin miniseries. So you can order that through your local comic shop. Space Ghost. Space Ghost is my big swing for 2024. I'm really excited for people to see what we've got planned. And then, working on a few other things. I'm working on another big 2 project right now that hopefully we'll be able to talk about later this year. Another creator-owned project that hopefully I'll be able to talk about later this year. Yeah, and then the return of my Kickstarter, the OZ.
Yes.
We'll be doing our third and final Kickstarter for that soon. I want to give Space Ghost a little bit of time to find its legs so I don't cannibalize publicity efforts on either book. But as soon as sort of that book is Space Ghost has found its feet, the OZ is the next thing on the docket. Ruben Rojas is drawing some amazing work on this last issue. And yeah, I can't wait for you all to see how it wraps up.
It's going to be brilliant, I'm sure. And again, if people want to keep up with you online, social media handles, website, so people can find you and follow you.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Pepos D. I'm at David Pepos Comics on Facebook. You can visit my website, which is currently under construction, davidpepos.com. Or you can subscribe to my newsletter, Pep Talks, at bit.ly/pepnews.
Very cool. David, it's always a pleasure talking to you. An incredibly talented writer. I always love reading your stuff and seeing your name underneath the writing thing on the comic book shelves when I go into the comic book store every Wednesday. So thank you for taking the time on a Sunday to be on air with us again. Next time we'll make it five times that you've been on. So we look forward to having you back.
Thanks. The rest of your night.
You too. There he goes. David Pepos, really talented. Like I said, if you get the chance to check out that Space Ghost jump on, that's going to be the number one great jumping on point. Like he mentioned, the Punisher is getting the trade paperback if you haven't gotten all the floppies yet. But if you can find them, like I said, I recommend you do. They're very, very cool book. If you're a Punisher fan, this is a great new take on the Punisher. So make sure you check that out as well as all the other projects he mentioned. We're going to take another brief commercial break. We're going to come right back in just a moment. We're going to air my interview with director Emma Westenberg talking about her brand new film starring Ewan McGregor and his real-life daughter, Claire McGregor. The new movie is called Bleeding Love. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio on the Big 550 KTRS. Please stand by.
This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
We are back. I'm your host, James Enstall, Geek to Me Radio, heard here every Sunday night on the Big 550 KTRS. Brought to you by the fine folks at the City of St. Charles, the Greater St. Charles Convention and Visitors Bureau. You, of course, know the website, discoverstcharles.com. That's discoverstcharles.com. A lot of cool stuff happening in St. Charles all the time. If you haven't been out there lately, go check them out. You can walk the historic cobblestone streets, get some great food, check out some cool shops all along North and South Main Street. It's a beautiful area, historic area. So there's something going on for everybody. They've got festivals going on all the time. If you don't believe me, check out the website, discoverstcharles.com. You can click on their events page, and there's always something cool going on. The person who's in charge of a lot of their events, Ryan Cooper, does a great job of producing these events like Christmas Traditions and Legends and Lanterns. Elizabeth over there is a fantastic person, constantly coming up with new ideas and constantly making sure that the community is involved. They have a great staff at the CVB, and whether you're out of town like David and want to come home, or you're local and just haven't been there for a while, start your trip at the website, discoverstcharles.com. Discoverstcharles.com, as we always say, it's an historically good time. We've got a fantastic interview with the director of a fantastic movie. I'm not going to preface this anymore. We're just going to dive right in. Right now, we're talking with director and executive producer Emma Westenberg. A new movie out, Bleeding Love, not to be confused with the song, obviously. This stars Ewan McGregor and his real-life daughter. It's a story about family and about addiction. I'm so excited to chat with Emma about this movie. Thank you for your time today.
Yes, thank you, too. I'm excited to be talking to you, too, about the movie.
We did a video back in January of my most anticipated films of 2024. This was on my list well before I knew I was even going to be talking to you. I love the premise. I love Ewan McGregor, the fact that he's doing this with his real-life daughter. So let me start with how you became attached to the project.
So one of the other producers, Vera Bulder, she and I know each other from Amsterdam from about 10 years ago. We started collaborating on music videos, short films, and then... So when she was setting up this project together with Clara, they were looking for directors, and she put my name in the hat. And I read the script, and I really liked it. And of course, you know, a chance to work with Ewan McGregor. I, you know, thought about how I would want to tell the story, and put a mood board together. And I pitched on the project, and then I got it. So that's where we are.
And it's so, I don't think you could ask for, this is your feature film debut, for a better chance at having, you know, the chemistry of a father-daughter than a real-life father-daughter. That's kind of an amazing thing for your first feature.
Yeah, it really was wonderful because, you know, both Ewan and Clara are such wonderful and open actors, but then also having them as a father-daughter, you know, we worked with improv, for instance, then you get this extra bits, you know, because they know each other obviously so well. So it was definitely really special.
With the other stuff you've done, because you've done TV episodes, you've done music videos, obviously you've done commercials and everything like that. When you're coming in to direct your very first feature film, what's your mindset? What kind of tools are you bringing to the table that you already used on these other projects? But then what are you learning as you're taking on a feature film?
I think, you know, the story is very much like a character-driven narrative. It's about a father and a daughter. It's quite an intimate drama. And I think I just all the time try to go back to that core, to the core of the story and to the core of the characters. And, you know, in that discussing with Ewan and Clara, their experience, but also my own experience, you know, everybody on set. So it was very much like whenever you don't know what to do because of time constraints or because of, you just go back to the core and figure out what is the best and fastest way to tell this part of the scene or this part of the story. So I think that was always the go-to. I mean, I think in the past couple of years in doing commercials, music videos, but then also doing episodical work as a director. So on TV shows, coming in to direct an episode. And I've been reading so many scripts over the years. I love to read books. I read a lot about screenwriting and storytelling. And I love watching movies. So I think it was like, you know, just learning bits and pieces over the years and trying the best I can once I was on set. That was it. Yeah.
And for those of you who may not be familiar, this is the plot of this movie is in the hopes of reconnecting with his estranged child, Ewan McGregor embarks on an impromptu road trip with his now adult daughter, played by his real life daughter, Clara McGregor. After she has a near fatal drug overdose, he's planning to take her to rehab, though she doesn't know that. And it's a little bit of a road movie. It's a family movie. It's a drama. There's so many great aspects of this film. And I know dealing with addiction can sometimes be tricky, depending on, it's got to be dealt with a certain amount of care. So with you and the writers, what was the collaboration process like on making sure this felt very authentic?
In my family, it's like also a subject. And I've been reading also a lot about it. And, you know, I think every adult knows destructive patterns, like and so also just looking honestly at myself, but also reading about it, you know, from my experience through, you know, through family or through friends as well, it was really just trying to depict it in the way that I experience it as well, where it's, I feel like in a lot of movies addiction is showed as like this really, it's all very grim and, you know, but I wanted to show it in a way that there's darkness and light, you know, that it's not that it's not all hopeless or dark or destructive, that exists. And because of that exists, there's also the other side, like this lightness and the humor. So I think that that's something that I was really looking for tonally. And then I did a lot of research. I was just reading a lot about, you know, substance abuse patterns. And there was this one book that I really liked, and it talks about that it's not necessarily about the substance or about, you know, the action that you get addicted to, if it's gambling or whatever, something else than a substance. It's more like what it is that you're trying to fill up, and then how you then get into this cycle of like feeling ashamed and then doing it again, and this kind of dopamine rush. So because the daughter in the movie is so young, she's not yet really addicted to the substance physically, right? It's more like an emotional thing. So I try to connect that to the sense of abandonment that she felt because of the father. It was a lot of different things that that put it together, but I think trying to find, you know, the understanding within addiction and showing that.
And you mentioned there was improv involved. I'm certain with an actor as seasoned as Ewan McGregor, were there times when they deviated a little from the script? Was there any improv that made it into the actual film, or was everything pretty much on book, as it were?
No, we had a lot of improv. We did a lot of improv. For instance, the first thing that comes to mind is the scene with the spider bites when they're in the car. That one was really like, we had shot the scene earlier, but then I wanted to film it again, but in a more dynamic way. And then also within the character, like trying to find the comedy in the scene, I was like, you know that, you know, thing where you tell your parents something and then they suddenly get worried and then you get really worried? Or it's like a dynamic that I have very much with my mother. and so they totally improvised on that, you know, kernel of the, of, or like action point, basically. So that was a very, a lot of improv in that scene. There was improv with the clown, you know, in the beginning of the movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So that as well, yeah.
It's just, when, like I said, when you look at the scope of the movie and everything, being this is as your first feature in the director's chair, you've got to be the big picture person. The writer has their bit, the producer has their bit, but the director has to see everything. Was there anything about this movie, now that it's out and it's in the world, that you look back and be like, I would have changed this if I had more time? Or are you one of those people, once it's out there, you're able to let it go and let it sail?
You know, it's funny because I definitely am not able to let it go. And it's very much like I look at it, you know, and I, with everything, I'm like, oh no, I wish I would have done everything different. But I talked with another film, but I have this always when I finish something that I just cannot look at it anymore. And I talked with another filmmaker friend of mine, and she was like, you know, you shouldn't be looking at it like that. You should just be like, you did the best you could in that. It's like a time capsule, you know, like in that space, and that's that. Then you, the next time, you learn from it. So I try to reprogram my mind like that instead of just be constantly like,
Yeah, depending on the personality type, it's hard to do that sometimes, just let it go. And I'm always, because I've talked to directors who have been, you know, in both worlds, are like, nope, once I'm done, it is what it is. And like people like, oh, I would have done that differently, or oh, I would have changed this. And when you're doing a project like this, what was the biggest, I don't want to say hurdle, what were some of the bigger challenges you faced? Was it time constraint? Was it location shoots? What were some of the biggest things you had to tackle taking on this particular film?
It was definitely time, in a way that, you know, some of the scenes were really run and gun. You know, we would just come in and it was like, okay, you have like an hour or 2 hours to just shoot like a really pivotal scene, just because we were running out of time, you know? So it was like a challenge. But at the same time, like, as soon as Clara and Ewan start playing, they immediately bring the fire, you know? So it's like, even though it was the time, we had the time constraints, we were able to get everything we wanted, and yeah, have all the tones of the story. Like, we didn't have to do any reshoots. So in that way, it was a constraint, but we still managed to pull it off. And also the DP, he was very like, the cinematographer, he's a very collaborative filmmaker that really thinks about the bigger picture and like how we can get everything done in the amount of time that we had. And we prepared really well. So yeah, it was definitely also thanks to him, Christopher Ripley. He's great. It was also his first movie, so it's really exciting.
Nice. Very cool. Obviously, there's a lot, like we said, a lot of moving parts when you're in the big chair directing a feature film. There's a lot of other people. What were some of the collaborations like? Were these people who you knew before? Were they new people? What was that? What was all that like? And who'd you get to work with?
Yeah, so it was a combination of first-time collaborators and also people that I had worked with for a really long time. Vera Bulder, one of the producers, she's a long-time collaborator. And Raven Artsen, who is the composer, is a longtime collaborator. Sophie Hardeman, we like graduated from art school together. She did the costume design. A new collaborator was Christopher Ripley, the cinematographer. We really, he's incredible. He's such a great storyteller and really very collaborative. And also Stefanik, who did the production design. She's incredible. It was like, yeah, you don't make a movie by yourself. It truly is such a group effort. And yeah, I feel very lucky having been able to make this movie with such a strong team and then Ewan McGregor.
that and maybe, who knows, maybe you'll direct him again. Maybe if you'll do an episode of Kenobi for the season two, if they do a second season, you could always be like, hey, I wouldn't mind doing a Star Wars, you know, just put your name in the hat.
Yeah, no, I hope so. It was such a pleasure to work with. Such an incredible actor. It was really special. I feel very lucky. Yeah.
I can only imagine. I haven't met him yet, but one of these Star Wars celebrations, Ewan, if you're listening, I'm coming for you. We'll get you on the show.
Yeah.
And yeah. I know we'd mentioned at the very beginning, I was teasing the song, Leona Lewis, Bleeding Love. They do sing along to that song in the truck. Were there other songs that they were messing with? Obviously, the title of this movie, Bleeding Love, makes perfect sense. But were there other songs that they were singing to? Because I know Ewan's got a great voice. I've never heard Clara sing before, but was that?
Yeah.
I assume that would be a fun scene to shoot anyway. But was that? Yeah. Talk a little bit about that scene, if you could.
Yeah. So when we were on set, we didn't have the song yet. So we had we had scripted that they would sing a song, but we didn't know which song yet. While we were filming, we had to figure out which song, but we had to clear it, you know, like it had to fit within the budget. So we were looking at different songs, and also tonally, it was hard to find like the perfect tone, you know, because you want it to be like a song that's really fun to sing along to, but also has meaning, that it kind of is like, yeah, it has this kind of, you know, power ballad. We can have a good time singing this song, feeling to it, but then also emotionally fits the story. So, and we were like sending songs back and forth and didn't find the perfect song. And then at some point, Clara was like, oh, you know, there was this one song that my father used to blast when he would pick me up from school, and I would get so embarrassed. And it was Bleeding Love. And she would get embarrassed because he was like belting the song, not because of the song itself. But I thought that was, and we were like, oh, that's a perfect song. And then I also thought it was just funny that, you know, you can have your father be Ewan McGregor and still be embarrassed. Right. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I guess that's just like any teenager. Yeah.
I guess that's just one of the universal truths is children are always embarrassed by their daughter, no matter who they are, who their parents are.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah. So that was a really funny, yeah. But so that's how we landed on the song. It was like a very true to their life pick.
Yeah, and that makes sense because it was such a, I saw that in the trailer, it was such a genuine moment between the two of them. The look on her face and his enjoyment of singing it. It just, that's why I want to make sure I asked you about that particular moment. And as you're filming this whole thing, obviously, you know, as people were always, you know, on a journey, you're learning about yourself and everything you do. What is it from this particular project that you learn most about yourself, either as a director or just as a human being and a person?
Well, there's a couple of things. Every time as a filmmaker, just learn a lot on set, right? Every time you're on set and in the edit and stuff, you learn so much. But it definitely was also in a weird way, very meditative, where, you know, when you're on set, you cannot think of anything else than just the moment, like the right now and because you have to capture the moment, right? So whatever you can do to capture the moment, you are doing, because that's what gives you the film in the end. And it was a really, really like powerful experience to do that for a month, because normally you do it for a day or 2 days, you know, for a short film or a commercial or music video. But this was like, you know, a month and a half of being really present with a group of people and, being really in tune with the group and the story. And I think that is something that I really enjoyed and really brought into my life afterwards, you know, just like being, sounds so, so cheesy, but being more present, yeah.
No, that's. I think that's something that we all struggle with, because people are always thinking about what they've done before. People are worried about something in the future, and being present is one of the hardest things, I think, for anybody, let alone a director who's got to concentrate on so many moving parts on a movie like this. With this now under your belt and behind you, obviously you've got other projects you're working on and everything like that. Is there anything, what would be a dream project for you to direct? It literally could be anything. If there's a TV series, like, oh, I'd love to take an episode of this. If it's an actor who you really want to work with, or a particular genre of movie that you're itching to try now, what's on your goal list going forward?
I definitely would love to make a genre movie, a genre crossover, or like a musical movie, dance, or with dancing, with music, with singing. Those type of movies I love and have always loved. And I would like to make something that is visually, like, you know, the Bleeding Love is an intimate story, so the visuals are more intimate too. But I would love to make something with a lot of color and movement and, you know, like a lot of music and dance. And so that would be my dream project for the next one.
And having that musical sensibilities with doing the music videos, like for Janelle Monáe, for example, and everything like that, is that something some actors and directors, once they get a certain project, it's like, okay, that's on my belt, I'm moving up now. Would you still, if for the right artist or something like that, go back and do a music video? Or is that something that was kind of like, I learned doing music videos going up and I don't want to do those anymore? What's your feeling on those?
No, I love doing all types of different, you know, like making a movie takes so long and the preparation and everything. I really enjoy combining, you know, making something quicker and shorter with, you know, these projects that just take a really long time to get off the ground and to edit. So I really enjoy doing the combination. I think with music videos, it is very much so dependent on if there's a click with the musical artist. So it's something that, you know, I really want to do if the combination is right. Yeah.
And for future projects coming up, is there something else that we can keep our eyes out for that you're able to talk about right now? Or is everything kind of under wraps?
Yeah, there's not, it's still pretty under the wraps. Nothing out there yet that I can talk about. Yeah.
But if people do want to find out more about you and keep up with you, websites, social media handles, things like that, if people want to find you?
Yes, I'm on Instagram. It's my name, emma.westenberg. I'm also on Vimeo. You can find my work on Vimeo. It's also just my name. You can just find it by my name.
Very cool. And with this film, I've no doubt we'll be seeing a great deal more of your work as we go forward. Emma Westenberg, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you too. Thank you.
There she goes. Thank you all for tuning in. I love all the interaction in the chats. Thank you all so much for listening. And for those of you who shared the show, thank you to my first guest as well, David Pippos. Thanks to Bugs Comics and Games and the Greater St. Charles Convention and Visitors Bureau, discoverstcharles.com, for their support. Thank you all of you who watched. Thank you all of you to listen. Thank you so much. And until next week, my friends.
That's our show. This is Geek.